This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
On September 20th, 2011, at Burley Middle School, six of the candidates running for three seats on Charlottesville City Council participated in a candidate forum that was co-sponsored by Charlottesville Tomorrow and the Daily Progress. The general election is being held November 8th, 2011.
Good evening. My name is Brian Wheeler with Charlottesville Tomorrow. This evening, we are co-hosting, along with the Daily Progress, this City Council candidate forum for six of the eight people seeking election to Charlottesville City Council. Three of the five seats on council will be on the ballot this November. Candidates Scott Bandy and Paul Long were invited but are not participating in the forum this evening. However, because of the large number of candidates we do have participating, we've developed a new format this year, which I think is going to allow us to cover a lot of topics. The candidates will respond to three quick answer questions. They're going to respond to questions we have prepared. They'll take questions from the audience, and they'll have an opportunity to ask each other questions. There will be opening statements, but there will not be closing statements. 1 week ago, we provided the candidates with the three topics for the quick answer questions and seven topics for the questions that I'll ask as moderator. The candidates have not seen the exact wording of these questions. We're going to cycle through them, and each candidate will get a chance to answer three of those seven questions from the moderator, which I will draw at random. One of the things we've done that we did not do at the forum 2 months ago is we've added an opportunity for each of these candidates to respond to one of the questions they were not asked. So again, there's seven moderator questions. I'm going to ask each of them three, then they're going to get a chance to say, I want to respond to that one of the other four that I didn't answer. After those questions, we'll take questions from the audience. There are pens and cards available in the lobby if you didn't already get one. My wife, Jean Wheeler, will be walking up and down the aisles collecting those cards from you. McGregor McCants is the managing editor of the Daily Progress, and he's going to screen those questions, and they may be directed to specific candidates if you choose. Each candidate will get a chance to respond to one audience question. After those audience questions, the candidates will get a chance to ask another candidate a question. And I want to point out that no candidate can be asked more than two questions from the other candidates. Throughout the forum, candidates, I'm going to announce how much time you have for your responses. Jennifer Marley is in the front row from Charlottesville Tomorrow, and she'll be keeping time for you. A yellow card at any time tonight indicates 30 seconds remain in your time. And a red card, or I think we have hot pink tonight, means you must stop. And as soon as I see that red card, I'm going to start saying thank you and encourage you to wrap up. The forum will run till 8:30. At 2 points in the forum, we expect we will have to change a videotape. So we just ask for your patience while we do that. Hopefully at this forum, we will not have a power outage like we did 2 months ago. I did bring a flashlight just in case. And finally, I just want the audience to know why we're doing this. I mean, Charlottesville Tomorrow and the Daily Progress, our goal is to help you make an informed decision. However, if your question is not asked tonight, and we did receive a lot of questions over the internet as well in advance of this forum, if your question is not asked tonight, I hope you will seek out an answer directly from the candidates. With that, I'll remind the audience to silence your mobile phones, and we'll begin with the candidates' opening statements immediately to my left, and allow them to introduce themselves and make an opening statement. You'll each get 2 minutes for your opening statement, and we will begin with Mr. Hooja.
Good morning. You know I'm an optimist, so I'm always in mourning. Charlottesville is a great community, and this week, Yahoo rating ranks Charlottesville as the best place to live in Charlottesville. And this is not an accident. It is the work of many people, and I have some part in it. I have a proven record of service to this community that has experience and expertise to find creative solutions which we need to have good government. Over the years, I have been privileged to be part of many projects, including Downtown Mall, Ravana Green Belt, energy programs, Tree Commission, Meals on Wheels, and many others. But like Mr. Jefferson, I like to dream of the future better than the history of the past. So let me share with you a bright vision of the future of Charlottesville. Okay. I'll work to preserve and enhance the quality of our environment, promote balanced transportation and interconnected network of bike lanes and sidewalks, and a better and more frequent bus service. I'll try to improve deteriorating infrastructure, promote quality education for all children, especially for early childhood needs, promote targeted workforce development so people may have good jobs. As you know, good job is the best anti-poverty program there is. I also hope to provide safe and decent housing in the neighborhoods, and I will continue to work to improve the race relations and diversity in our community. I'll listen and be proactive in dealing with community needs. I'll work with all the citizens of this community so it will be a better community for all the residents in this community. So I'll seek your support in this venture for myself and my two colleagues, Didi Smith and Kathy Galvin. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Mr. Collins, you have 2 minutes.
Good evening. My name is Brandon Collins. I've lived in Charlottesville my entire life. I'm 38 years old. I have a teenage daughter who's in the public schools here. I have worked, like many people in our community, in the restaurant world for most of my adult life. I've been very much engaged in activism locally, on a state level, and on the national level. You can visit my website, votebrandoncollins.wordpress.com, and learn a little bit more about the kinds of activism I've been engaging in, and also see my entire platform. We hear a lot of talk about how great our city is. Yes, Yahoo just deemed Charlottesville one of the best places to live again, but Charlottesville, for many of our residents, still remains a very difficult place to live and a very difficult place just to get by. We hear a lot of talk about the current economic crisis, but I want to point out that there are many in our community who have been in an economic crisis for their entire lives. The environmental crisis continues as well. I think we have a duty to do more than rely on small reforms, the free market, or the federal government to begin to create a more equitable, sustainable, and safe world. And we can act big without making excuses, and we need to do it starting now. Currently and in the coming years, we're faced with budget cuts from the state and federal governments. I will stand up particularly for education to make up the difference if need be. But I don't want to just maintain the status quo. I think we can work towards guaranteed employment. We can double our attention and funding for affordable housing. We can greatly expand public transportation. And all of those things, we can do much more for our environment. After the Democratic primary, there is still a great need for a voice for social justice on City Council, and I would like to be that candidate. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Galvin.
Thank you, Brian, and everyone here tonight. My name is Kathy Galvin, and along with Hooja, Didi, Kristen Zekos, and Dave Norris, I will work with you to build a better community. Because of our combined skills and knowledge, I am honored to be part of this Democratic ticket. Given my experience, I believe I can make a unique contribution to council if I'm elected. I grew up in Brockton, Massachusetts, a city known for supplying the Union Army with half of its shoes during the Civil War and boxing. My parents were the children of immigrants from Ireland and Lithuania, a combustible combination. My father had an eighth grade education, and he was a disabled World War II veteran. My mother, an Army nurse who went to college on the GI Bill, became the breadwinner on a school nurse's salary. Her belief in education was strong. She was the one who wrote the first grant for Brockton's Head Start program and had my brother and I volunteer every summer as teacher's aides. I saw factories close and neighborhoods wither away, all before I went to college. It is no wonder that I have dedicated my professional life to designing places where children can flourish. I've run my own architectural practice for 18 years in Charlottesville, where I've raised two sons with my husband, Michael. We chose to send our boys to Johnson Elementary, even though we lived on the north side of town. I was the chair of Albemarle County's Development Initiative Steering Committee, which created the county's growth management tool known as the Neighborhood Model. In 07, I was elected to the school board. Like Hoosier, these experiences have turned me into an optimist. We can safeguard the quality of our rivers and air and maintain our capacity to grow local food if we work with our neighbors to minimize sprawl and plan for compact, connected places. We can live, work, and play in a community where opportunities abound. And Charlottesville's character can be maintained while promoting the dignity of work and prosperity for everyone in the city. Please support me and the Democratic ticket on November 8th. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Mr. Fenwick.
Good evening. I'm Bob Fenwick. And listening to the opening statements, a phrase just went through my mind. These are the best of times, and these are the worst of times. We live in a beautiful city. It is connected. The people are energetic. But we face, hopefully, not a terrible recession, but people are now talking about a double-dip recession. And I would like you to keep that in mind as we go through this forum. The city is poised to commit probably $300 million in huge public works programs. The new dam at Ragged Mountain, the new pumping station, the repair and increase of the pumping station in Woolen Mills, the replacement of the Belmont Bridge, and the sewer infrastructure, which by itself may be bigger than all the other three combined. Now, my experience has been with the Corps of Engineers and as a small business general contractor in Virginia for over 35 years. I have dredged, I have built, repaired, and designed bridges. I have designed sewer and water treatment facilities for small towns, and I think I am poised to bring to City Council a look at these huge expenditures if they are to go through and help Dave and anybody else who is on City Council make the best decision, because it's our tax money that's going to pay for all this. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Smith.
Good evening. My name is Dee Dee Smith, and I'm running for City Council on the Democratic ticket along with my fellow Dems, Kathy Galvin and Mr. Hoosier. And I think you'll see that we will bring a wealth of experience, energy, informed decision-making, and proven leadership to this next council. I've lived in Charlottesville for more than 30 years, and I think it's the best place in the whole country to live. My husband Tim and I have raised two children who have benefited greatly not only from an excellent public education system, but from the many cultural opportunities that our city offers. It's a great city to raise a family, as many of you know. But as we also know, not all of our fellow residents share this high quality of life. Whether it's in our education system, availability of housing, access to transportation, and even the arts and culture scene, we must do a better job of recognizing the wealth that we have in our diversity and assuring that everyone has the opportunity to thrive here in Charlottesville. Likewise, our quality of life is vulnerable to the pressures of growth and aging infrastructure. Our history is catching up to us. Our challenge will be to address the pressing environmental, transportation, and other infrastructure issues that we have without destroying the rich natural and cultural and historic character of our city. We can do better, and we will if we're willing to look forward and embrace a 21st century vision for our city. I believe that by using innovative solutions, we can ensure the same high quality of life for generations to come. If elected, I look forward to serving with my fellow Democrats, and while we won't always agree on every issue, we are united in the basic democratic principles of opportunity and respect for all, support for public education, open and efficient government, protection of our environment. Thank you.
Next, Mr. Williams.
Hi, my name is Andrew Williams. I'm running for our city council as an independent, mostly because I don't see the need for partisan politics at the local level. There's going to be disagreements at the federal level all the time. There's always disagreements at the state level. But here in Charlottesville, not only do we have the potential, we have the ingenuity to give a big chunk of government back to the people in this election. For us to truly be a world-class city and a diverse or a city that highlights their diversity, shouldn't we have a diverse perspective on council? That's something that we don't have. It is the leadership that is fine, but it is the lack of balanced representation in government that is the reason for why we still have problems in the city, why poverty in the city isn't addressed, why gentrification affects the underrepresented communities. And I want to serve Charlottesville independently and with the primary focus on the residents. I do know how this system works. I am 25, and being the youngest candidate is can be a challenge and somewhat intimidating. But I know how this system works, and I am confident that my goals will serve Charlottesville's residents. Partisan politics isn't necessary at the local level. And I believe this election we have the opportunity to move forward and really give a big chunk of government back to the people. While my proposed initiatives are sincere, they are backed by sound judgment from the perspective of the worker, a taxpayer, a student, and a concerned citizen on the ground as myself. The personal characteristics of a good claims adjuster, such as myself, includes the qualities of integrity, intelligence, empathy, and a positive attitude and inquisitiveness. Inquisitiveness is one of the reasons why I don't support a lot of the initiatives that our city's leadership does. We need to move forward, and we need to do it this election.
Thank you. All right. Next, we will begin with our quick answer questions. We have three of those tonight. The candidates were provided those topics in advance. Candidates, when I reach you in the list, please let me know if you need me to repeat the question when it's your turn. Our goal here for the audience is for the candidates to give us a short yes or no response. And candidates, I'll call your name before you respond for the benefit of the audio podcast. So our first question relates to the water plan. And this one will be answered first by Mr. Williams, and then we'll work our way down this direction. So the question to Mr. Williams, as the primary approach for adding to our long-term water supply, do you favor dredging and water conservation before construction of a new or taller dam at the Ragged Mountain Reservoir? Yes or no?
Yes, I favor dredging first.
Ms. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwick?
In this recession, dredge now, dam later.
Ms. Galvin?
No.
Mr. Collins?
Absolutely yes, dredge now.
Mr. Hooja?
Yes to all three. We think we need all three of them, dam, dredging, and conservation together.
Our next yes-no question relates to the Meadow Creek Parkway, and we are going to start this one with Mr. Fenwick, and then we will go to Ms. Galvin. So back, wait, let me sure if I have that right.
So what was the question?
We're going to go, I haven't said it yet, but it's going to be related to the Meadow Creek Parkway. We're going to go candidates 3, 4, 5, 6. So that will be Fenwick, Galvin, Collins, Hugis. You'll come back down towards me, and then we'll go to the end. So the question on the Meadow Creek Parkway, again, a yes-no question. Mr. Fenwick, do you support construction of the Meadow Creek Parkway in the city of Charlottesville? Yes or no?
Not with my plan to have bike lanes and free bus transportation. I do not support bringing the Meadow Creek Parkway right into the middle of town.
Ms. Galvin?
Yes.
Mr. Collins?
No, I do not support the parkway. There's still a lawsuit and many things that need to be figured out, and I don't think we should even begin construction until after the lawsuit this December.
Mr. Hooja?
Yes, I support Meadow Creek Parkway. It is already under construction. It is long overdue.
Mr. Williams.
No.
Ms. Smith.
No, I don't.
Thank you. I think we got everybody on that one. And again, we are looking for yes or no responses to these questions. The third quick response question has to do with ward-based elections for Charlottesville City Council. Currently, all city council members are elected at large in Charlottesville. And with this one, we'll begin with Mr. Collins, and then we will go to Hooja, and we'll work this way and then head down to the end. So, Mr. Collins, would you support switching from at-large seats to ward-based representation for elections to Charlottesville City Council, yes or no?
I cautiously support the idea of moving to a ward-based system. I firmly support direct election of our mayor. We need to watch out that gentrification doesn't dilute the voting power of folks in our neighborhood, so that's something to be mindful of as we explore ward-based elections.
Mr. Hooja.
I generally support at-large system, but I'm open to exploring the possibility of a combined system, not just ward system.
Mr. Williams.
I believe I was the first to bring back up the idea of a ward system back in 2009, and also in this election. I do, cautiously. We need to separate the executive branch and the legislative branch. We need checks and balances, which we do not have.
Thank you. Ms. Smith.
I too would like to explore this issue, but we need more information, and we certainly need to hear more from the public.
And Mr. Fenwick.
Well, I'm against disenfranchising any part of our city. I am a strong proponent of going to a ward system.
Ms. Galvin.
I am in favor of investigating the possibility, and I agree with Ms. Smith that we do need to open this up for discussion in the public.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to get into the moderator questions. I'm going to draw them at random here. All right. Our first question, we'll begin with Mr. Hooja, then Mr. Collins, then Ms. Galvin. They will be the three candidates answering this first question, which relates to your qualifications for city council. Mr. Hooja, please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on city council, and in your response, you have 1 minute.
I'm 38-year resident of Charlottesville, City of Charlottesville. First 31 years, I was director of planning and community development and strategic planning, which I think prepares me well for city council job. I've been on city council for the last 4 years. I also am emerging faculty in architecture school, and I have a great deal of experience and expertise in finding solutions for our community. And I think I'm qualified for the job.
Thank you. Next, the question goes to Mr. Collins, and I'll read it again. Please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on city council.
Well, I am also a lifelong resident of Charlottesville. I've been here 38 years since I was born, just as long as Mr. Hooja. I think having lived here, I know a great deal about our city. I'm very much engaged in local politics. I frequent council meetings. I'm very familiar with the process. I have brought issues to the attention of city council, some of which they have acted on. I wrote a draft of a resolution that the council passed unanimously this past winter regarding immigrants' rights. But ultimately, what qualifies me for the job is my politics, and those politics are extreme concern for folks in poverty here in our city and representing their needs. And I don't think enough has been done to address housing, jobs, our environment, and our public transportation system. Those are my politics, and that is what ultimately qualifies me for the job.
Thank you. Next, this question will go to Ms. Galvin. Please describe your past experience that qualifies you to be on city council.
I'm currently a Charlottesville City School Board member, and I was elected in 07, so I'm finishing up my fourth year. In that capacity, I was able to learn firsthand what it takes to develop policy that needs to be implemented and that has direct impact on the lives of our most vulnerable, which are the children. I also learned to work very carefully and closely with our superintendent, who in the case of the city council would be akin to the city manager. I believe strongly that we do need to empower that person so that they can make decisions. I was also the chair of the Development Areas Initiative Steering Committee for Altamont County in the mid-90s for 3 years. That was a very, very diverse group of neighborhood association presidents, environmentalists, real estate agents, as well as developers, and we forged a growth management tool, the neighborhood model. That shows me that we can reach consensus on very complex problems and come up with solutions that are holistic and very successful. Thank you.
So I just want to remind the candidates, we're going to switch to the second question now, but if any of you want to come back to any of these questions, you'll have that opportunity to have yourself be asked one of them after you go through them the first time. So the second moderator question, we'll begin with Mr. Fenwick, and this is on transportation. Do you support an extended transit system? If so, how would you raise the money to pay for additional service? And you have 1 minute, Mr. Fenwick.
Well, our transportation system in our community now is chaotic. Bumper to bumper to Greene County, to Crozet, 250 West, 29 South, 20 South, 250 East, 20 North, 29 North. Bumper to bumper. Something has to be done. I would propose to, since we are now subsidizing the city bus system 80%, make it a free system. We have two examples right in front of us of how to fill buses, UVA and the trolley, and the common denominator is they are free. Now, I would pay for it, and this is sort of tongue-in-cheek. The next time a consultant comes into our town, I'd say, we have people in town that can give us the advice, and I'd put that money to transportation. But there's also another source, and that's dredging. And it is my belief that not only can we dredge at cost, but we can make money dredging. So free transportation for businesses and for people.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Smith will get the transportation question. Do you support an extended transit system? If so, how would you raise the money to pay for additional service? Ms. Smith.
Thank you. I, too, think we have to completely redesign our public transit system. Yes, I absolutely agree that we need to extend it. We also need to coordinate our network of bicycling trails and walking trails with the transit system so that people can use actually a combination of public transit to get where they need to go. I too know that the system is currently heavily subsidized, so the difference to make up the expense is not nearly as burdensome as it might appear. But as I say, we just need to completely relook at where we go, how we move people around, and where people really need to go, and where we want them to go. So I think it's all necessary and very possible.
Thank you. Next, Mr. Williams, do you support an extended transit system? If so, how would you raise the money to pay for additional service?
Yes, I do support a larger transit system. I believe that if you build it, they will come. Not the new dam, but a larger transit system. It is my position that we need to move forward with looking at the budget and trimming the fat. Where can we save money? Or how can we not make a bad decision? Dredging, for instance, as Mr. Fenwick highlighted, would create an item that we can sell and would be a lot cheaper than building a new dam. Also, we need to make sure that every dollar that we're spending on nonprofits are where it needs to be. I believe that we need to scrutinize the budget and make sure that we're only supporting nonprofits, for the most part, that can provide results with all due respect to them. Taxpayers' money, we're stewards of this money. And it's very important for us to look at very important initiatives to make sure that these companies are being monitored and held accountable.
All right. Now, so we don't have the same group of three answering all the questions. I'm going to skip Mr. Hooja at this point. The third moderator question will go to Mr. Collins. City-county-UVA relations is the topic. The question is, how should the city, county, and the University of Virginia work together to enhance our community's unique character and economic vitality? Mr. Collins.
Well, this is a big topic that a lot of folks are talking about. I approached this issue by looking at cooperation as a means to an end and not the ends itself. I think when we look at what's going on with the county, the ball is really in their court. You can look to recent decisions that suggest that they have very little interest in hearing what the city has to say. If you look at the decision on the Western Bypass, there was absolutely no input prior to that from the city. With UVA, they are our largest employer. They have a new president that I think is ripe. We can get her more engaged in seeing what the university can do for our community. The university is our largest employer, so they affect our wages in a very big way. But not only are they our largest employer, they're also our largest polluter with the coal plant there, and they're also the biggest factor on affordable housing in our city, We need to stand up for our residents. Thank you.
The third moderator question will now go to Ms. Galvin. How should the city, county, and the University of Virginia work together to enhance our community's unique character and economic vitality? Ms. Galvin.
Yes, I think it's fundamental that both of those, all three entities have a vested interest in helping and working with each other. We do have a vehicle called the PAC, the Planning and Coordination Council, that has currently been very, very useful in creating a sustainability report and a game plan for us. I think that's very, very important to keep in mind because we're already working together with the university and the county. One fundamental useful tool will be to look at how we can reduce our single occupant vehicle use. The university is very much engaged with the idea of reducing that from 78% to 60%. Therein is where we could reduce the congestion that Mr. Fenwick talks about. We can build more workforce housing in the city, and we can work with the university to find out how we can do the economic development together. There's been some opening because of the new personnel in the PAC and actually in the leadership of the university. So again, with the county as well, they have an economic system that we share. We are also going to be working with Tim O'Brien, and together we can also look at that together.
Thank you. The third moderator question will now go to Mr. Fenwick. How should the city, county, and the University of Virginia work together to enhance our community's unique character and economic vitality? Mr. Fenwick.
Well, probably as a start, the county can not send us any more. We will not compromise letters as they sent us on the dredging damming discussion. Actually, the UVA kind of stands apart from the city and the county. The city and the county get in these discussions about transportation and dredging damming and sewer treatment plants and all that, and UVA sort of stands off to the side, which is probably good for them. But as I went around the city, somebody suggested that we use UVA more, not only the active professors and students, but the retired people, and also from people coming in town, use them as the consultants or the experts to give us a background that we can use to decide these big community issues. And probably if they wanted some kind of compensation, then we could take it off their real estate taxes or work something out like that.
Thank you. I'll now draw the fourth moderator question, which will go to Ms. Smith, then Mr. Williams, then we'll come back to Mr. Hooja. The topic is workforce development and jobs. Last month, the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce reported that Charlottesville lost 3,248 jobs during the years 2000 to 2010. What specifically should City Council do to promote employment? Ms. Smith.
Well, what I think the with the loss of jobs in our area, what we really need to be thinking about is having a new identity or attracting a new identity in employment for our area. We hear a lot about biomedical technology. That's clearly one that meshes well with the resources that Charlottesville has to offer, but there are others. We have a large university that's a major attractant to certain industries. We have a strong legal system, a strong insurance system, all the things that businesses really need to get going, particularly businesses with jobs. So I think we not only need to be thinking about what identity we'll have, but then we need to retool our education system to produce a workforce that can actually be employed within that industry. At the same time, we need to be thinking we're a very attractive city, but we're a very high cost of living city. So at the same time, City Council needs to be thinking about lowering our cost of living.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next, the fourth moderator question will go to Mr. Williams. Last month, the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce reported that Charlottesville lost 3,248 jobs during the years 2000 to 2010. What specifically should City Council do to promote employment? Mr. Williams.
Well, first off, instead of providing more funding for public housing, we should focus more so on vocational training, because throughout history, anytime you have a people without jobs, educated people will go out and create jobs. What we need to do is go into the underrepresented neighborhoods, provide training, encourage training, and making sure that people have an understanding that public service or public assistance isn't forever, and we need to move forward to educate and develop our people, but also they're encouraged to radiate that enthusiasm. Instead of throwing money at the homeless, we should teach them through vocational training to earn money and get in qualified positions or start a job if possible. Improve the dropout rate. Get parents involved. And we need to scrutinize the budget and make sure that we're spending money where the needs are. I'd also like to look into seeing where we can trim the fat on our city services by existing services, perhaps offered by religious organizations.
Thank you. The fourth moderator question will now go to Mr. Hooja. Last month, the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce reported that Charlottesville lost 3,248 jobs during the years 2000 to 2010. What specifically should City Council do to promote employment? Mr. Hooja.
City can do many things to improve job situation, and some of those things are being done. But you need to realize that most of the jobs created in nationwide are by small businesses. So we need to promote and help small businesses and minority businesses in our community. And we can do that in providing consulting as well as advice. We can also cooperate with the University of Virginia to see if some of those technical jobs, and especially biotech jobs, could be located in our city. City has also financial tools to help. We have tax increment financing, which we can facilitate businesses to locate in our community, like we have done in Martha Jefferson Hospital area and on the Water Street, 600 new jobs by providing the incentives. So there are many things we can do. As you know, as I mentioned earlier, the job is the most important anti-poverty program. And if you have a good job, you can do many things.
Thank you. I want to remind the audience, you do have the opportunity to submit questions on cards if you have not done so already. And we will pick those up, and I assume my wife Jean is out there somewhere, and I can't see her. Jean, are you out there? She's in the back. So Jean, if anyone has a card and wants to wave it in the air, Jean will pick it up and we'll give it to McGregor McCants to review those questions. This time I'm going to skip Mr. Collins so we can randomize this a little bit more. We'll begin with Ms. Galvin for the fifth moderator question, which is on education. Do you support the city school board's grade reconfiguration initiative? Why or why not? Ms. Galvin.
Yes, I do support the city school's decision to reconfigure the schools. We were that was a product of a management efficiency study back in 2009, 2008. And in the result of that study, we learned that we were really over capacity. We did not have enough students for a lot of our buildings. One way to deal with that was to consolidate and to look at having only one middle school as opposed to two middle schools. That way we were not going to be duplicating that staffing. And we learned that over 20 years we were going to be gaining back some of those savings through savings in operational costs. Having said that, it also freed up the opportunity to turn the Walker Middle School into a state-of-the-art preschool center. It also gave us the opportunity to rethink our alternative education as well as the Henry Avenue Learning Center. Both of these learning opportunities are currently either leased or in really, really space-strapping circumstances.
Thank you. The fifth moderator question will now go to Mr. Fenwick. Do you support the City School Board's grade reconfiguration initiative? Why or why not?
I do support it, and it's a way to look at the entire education process in our city, particularly when it comes to the dropout rate for our youngsters. Our approach usually is to throw money at a problem, and that's going to fix things. Well, we all know that it doesn't fix things. So I support the reconfiguration, and I also would look at other programs. If they work, we should keep them. If they don't work, we should reconfigure them, because it's the children that the whole point of the education system is to get the children educated and ready for life.
Thank you. The fifth moderator question will now go to Ms. Smith. Do you support the City School Board's grade reconfiguration initiative? Why or why not?
Well, actually, I would look forward to hearing more about it, although I did attend several of those meetings. And at this point, I don't support the reconfiguration of the schools, largely because, as Mr. Fenwick said, I think it was actually an opportunity to look at our whole system, and it was a missed opportunity, that the problems that we have historically had in our school system could have been, I believe, dealt with in a more creative way than just, moving some of the grades around. I also fear that it is a system, looking at the new system that we've had before, that didn't work. And so I would just like to see more data on why the school system thinks that this will improve the achievement of our children.
Thank you. And Jean, if you collected any questions, if you could bring them on up front here. We'll begin the sixth moderator question with Mr. Williams, then we'll go to Mr. Hooja, then Mr. Collins. The topic is the comprehensive plan. Recent projections show that the city's population will increase significantly in the next 50 years. What changes would you advocate for in the city's comprehensive plan to address that growth? Mr. Williams.
Well, the first thing that we need to do is reconfigure our city leadership. Throw a different perspective and a new, fresh perspective in City Council. Charlottesville, along with our region, needs to be self-sustainable, especially in hard economic times. I believe we have the potential and the capacity to support ourselves and not be fully dependent on external circumstances. We ultimately are on the way to being a world-class city, but we must support and enable progress of the underrepresented neighborhoods, not solely, but also with the idea that we are only as strong as our weakest link. We have a lot of weak links in the city that city leadership has not addressed, and that's the unfortunate truth, and they're doing the best that they can, and I applaud them. I have nothing against Democrats, but if you don't have a different perspective, how can you represent people with a different need? We need to move forward, and we need to do it fast in this election season. I know how this works, and while my efforts are sincere, I am confident.
Thank you. The sixth moderator question will now go to Mr. Hooja. Recent projections show that the city's population will increase significantly in the next 50 years. What changes would you advocate for in the city's comprehensive plan to address that growth? Mr. Hooja.
Comprehensive plan is an important guide for future growth and development and maintenance of our community. There are many things we can do in the comprehensive plan to accommodate the new growth. We can do infill development. We can also raise densities in corridors where there is a possibility for higher density. And between those, and plus I will also encourage mixed-use development in our community to accommodate more population.
Thank you. The sixth moderated question will now go to Mr. Collins. Recent projections show that the city's population will increase significantly in the next 50 years. What changes would you advocate for in the city's comprehensive plan to address that growth?
Well, first, I think we need to get an accurate view of what that population is going to look like. I think the things going on with the water supply and some other things, I don't think we have a really great idea of what population is going to look like. That said, I've looked at the comprehensive plan quite a bit, and you can just go through and see a ton of things that are in there that we're either not doing or that don't make sense or don't match up with other parts of the plan. Now, I think we've done an okay job on the environment, but, you know, look at the parkway and the water supply. We're not paying attention to the needs of the environment. I think, in particular, we need to completely revise the parts about the economy and seek to find businesses that are friendly to our needs and reevaluate how we look to get folks employment and you know, we need to ensure that gentrification does not proceed as it is. We don't want Charlottesville to be a playground for the rich. Thanks.
All right. Seventh and last moderator question. We'll begin with Ms. Galvin. The topic is police and crime. The question is, what is your top priority for the city police department? Ms. Galvin.
I think for any police department, the top priority needs to be excellent community relations. And it also needs to be providing safety for everybody in our community. One of the reasons why I think I'm a very strong candidate for this political office is that I also bring design to the table. And many of our places, including our public parks, including our public streets, aren't designed to allow for self-policing of the community. By that I mean eyes on the street. That way we ourselves as residents, as businesses, are going to be sharing in that policing. That will reinforce the community nature of policing, and it will make it also a factor in our approach to taking care of each other as well as taking care of our public places. So again, it's not just a matter of what the police can do, it's also what we can do with our public streets, how we design our parks, and then what we can do to work together to make a safer community.
Thank you. The seventh moderator question will now go to Mr. Fenwick. What is your top priority for the city police department?
As great a city as we have, this place would be in chaos in about 2 weeks with no police department. That's how important they are to this community. I appreciate the work that they do. And there will come a day, near or distant future, when somebody's life or livelihood is going to depend on a police man or woman doing the proper thing. So I would look very closely at making sure our police are trained, real life training, not just a book training, but to make sure that we fund fully the training for the community service and see if we can keep some of these young fellas out of jail as well, besides publicizing programs like the reentry program. If we lose a man, we lose his children as well.
Thank you. The seventh moderator question will now go to Ms. Smith. What is your top priority for the city police department?
Well, I too feel we need to support our police, as important as they are. And I also agree with Ms. Galvin that community engagement is vitally important, that the community knows their police, that the police know their community. And part of that is enabling the police officers to live in the city, at least near the city. And that has to do with affordability of housing. It also has to do with cost of living, which is different than affordability of housing. So I think we really need to be very aware that our public service folks, police, fire, teachers, have the ability to live in the community in which they work.
Thank you. We're going to take this opportunity to change the tape in our video camera. And while we're doing that, and you can go ahead and change the tape out, I just want to remind the candidates the next thing we're going to do is you can circle back and pick one of those topics that you were not asked about. And I'll just remind you what the topics were: your qualifications for city council, transportation and transit, city-county UVA relations, workforce development jobs, education, comprehensive plan, and police and crime. So you get to go back and pick one of those that you did not previously address. We'll begin with Mr. Hooja, and we'll just work our way down the table. Thank you for your patience while we change the tape. And as soon as I see the red light over there, I'll know we're good to go. Great. Okay, Mr. Hooja, is there a question you would like to go back to?
I'd like to talk about education.
Okay, let me read that question again. Do you support the City School Board's grade reconfiguration initiative? Why or why not? Mr. Hooja.
I basically support the system because I think it will be better for our children. And I think having a one middle school will be better for us in the long run because we don't have that many students to go with. But an important thing in education is that we have good quality education for all children, not just some children. And I think this new reconfigured system will allow better opportunity for children to get a good education.
Thank you. Mr. Collins, is there one you would like to go back to?
I'd like to talk about jobs, please.
Last month, the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce reported that Charlottesville lost 3,248 jobs during the years 2000 to 2010. What specifically should City Council do to promote employment? Mr. Collins.
I have suggested a very ambitious plan to move Charlottesville towards having guaranteed employment for every resident here. And this is not something that can happen overnight, but there are steps we can take to get us there. One thing that I think we should be leery of is inviting middle class, very specialized jobs into town that are going to bring new residents to town, and it's not going to do anything for the folks who already live here. So what I suggest is opening a job center, not to mimic the VEC, but to supplement it. We can build on the Section 3 coordinator program. We can build on the ex-offender reentry program with human resources and social services and work with the private sector to guarantee that folks can get a job at a living wage in the private sector, and if not, we can put them directly to work for the city through Public Works and Parks and Recreation and also provide temporary employment.
Thank you. Ms. Galvin, is there a question you would like to go back to? This feels like Jeopardy all of a sudden.
Yeah, it does. Movies for $200. I would like the comprehensive plan.
Okay.
Please.
Recent projections show that the city's population will increase significantly in the next 50 years. What changes would you advocate for in the city's comprehensive plan to address that growth? Ms. Galvin.
I think the comprehensive plan really would do well to have more tools, both visualization tools, as in plans, as well as ways to measure how well we succeed in achieving those plans. Currently, there's a lot of narrative, there's a lot of goals, but it does not actually depict for the public what it is we're talking about. So when we're talking about growth, we need housing, workforce housing, as Ms. Smith has talked about, for our firefighters and our teachers. We need jobs, as everyone has been talking about. Where do they go? At what intensity? That sort of thing can be done with creative planning, planning that's also being done in Alabama County through the neighborhood model. That was what I worked on when I was on the Development Areas Initiative Steering Committee. When we have a plan like that and a tool to master plan, we can then identify where the density goes, where the mixture of uses go, and then we can also agree on the principles of building and growth that will then allay fears in the neighborhood.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fenwick, is there a question you would like?
I'd like to address workforce development and jobs.
Last month, the Charlottesville Regional Chamber of Commerce reported that Charlottesville lost 3,248 jobs during the years 2000 to 2010. What specifically should City Council do to promote employment? Mr. Fenwick.
Well, the notes I got for the forum had workforce slash jobs. I would turn that around immediately. It's jobs that we need. We are very fortunate to have the University of Virginia as an anchor, but we have people out there that need jobs, almost any jobs. I got a degree in physics, and my heart is with carpenters and plumbers and heat and air guys because I'm a construction contractor. We just need jobs. What good does the workforce development do if we don't have the jobs? That's the problem. Now, we talk the talk, but we don't walk the walk. Four times I've stood in front of City Council and I said, you can do something tonight that will help get us jobs. And that's to put signs out that realtors show people where to go to open houses. But the council thinks that trashes up the city. So there's no other economic activity that creates more jobs than the sale of a house. We can do that now.
Thank you. Ms. Smith, is there a question you would like to go back
to? Yes, I'd like the question on UVA relations.
Great. How should the city, county, and the University of Virginia work together to enhance our community's unique character and economic vitality? Ms. Smith.
Thank you. And the reason I wanted this is because this is near and dear to my heart. I think UVA is a grossly underutilized resource. It has obviously has a major impact on our community, yet it is just too separated from our daily government. I'd like to see a lot more collaboration with the university, particularly as we go into the comprehensive plan and with the coordinated one community prelude to it. We're going to be using a lot of data. I strongly believe in evidence-based decision making, and I think the university could facilitate that. We also, as we're looking at jobs and industry, obviously the university can facilitate with that. And the more we become one community with the university, I think our problems will be much easier to solve.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, is there a question you would like?
Yes, with City, County, and UVA relations.
How should the City, County, and the University of Virginia work together to enhance our community's unique character and economic vitality? Mr. Williams.
It's my position that city councilors have a fiduciary responsibility to Charlottesville residents. We do need to work with Albemarle County, and yes, we do need to work with UVA, to support this region. It's going to take our collective efforts. But as far as, having Albemarle County bully Charlottesville or initiatives that aren't mutually beneficial, of course, I'll be more than happy to support my fellow residents in making sure that they get the biggest dividends. I know how the system works, and while I am sincere, and I do feel confident that upon a successful election, I can serve Charlottesville the way that they need to be served. My question is, how do we keep residents and small business owners happy and prove that we are serving them and not special interests like large companies with larger appetites for our regional resources? I feel like governments continue to make decisions that erode the confidence of our people.
Thank you. All right, great. Next, we're going to go into the audience questions. I appreciate your patience waiting for that. Let me pick those up. We will begin with Mr. Williams and work our way back down this direction, and I have one for each of you. Mr. Williams, and you will have 1 minute to respond to these questions. What, if anything, will you do to have a significant impact on poverty in Charlottesville? Mr. Williams.
Well, first off, I'd like to highlight, I do believe that if we look at the results from nonprofits and scrutinize our budget, that's going to take care of a lot of our problems. What we should do is reach out to religious organizations. That's different, and it may be somewhat controversial, but there is separation of church and state, and if we really need a new perspective, that's a new idea. Since the dawn of time, you know, on the planet, there's one organization or one group of organizations that have been able to serve the people better than government. That is religious organizations. If they do it better than we can, then we need to, you know, look at them as well. And other nonprofits with results. Workforce development is a very important factor. I was almost homeless in Charlotte, North Carolina. I made the decision to move to Michigan, and quickly I came here to visit Charlottesville, Virginia. It is now my home. I am a professional insurance claims adjuster. I manage six states of policies, and I'm in school. And I did that with a positive attitude because of the opportunity I had.
The next audience question will go to Ms. Smith. What actions will you take to make Charlottesville more self-reliant and resilient, both economically and ecologically? Ms. Smith.
Wow. There's a question. Self-reliant. Well, actually, that's a great question because it does speak to my passion for conservation, preservation, and restoration, the cornerstones of sustainability. Self-reliance, I think, does have to do with conserving what we have by balancing what we need with what we use. It is a standard way of planning these days for integrated resource management, say, for instance, where when the parkway is a great example of this, we have cars, we need more roads. Well, let's balance that with lowering the number of cars that we have. We need more water. Let's balance that with conserving and using less water. That is one way that I would promote being more self-reliant.
Thank you. The next audience question will go to Mr. Fenwick, and this is one actually that came from over the internet. We used Google Moderator, which is a program that you can use to vote on questions. People could submit them and vote on their preference for which questions should be asked, and I know this was one of the favorites. Mr. Fenwick, great cities celebrate their rivers. What strategies would you advance to maximize the presence and value of the Ravanna River in the life of the city? Mr. Fenwick.
I would dredge the reservoir. It's very simple. You know, for a progressive city, we don't have one stream, and that is connected to the river, that is rated better than critical. Every stream that runs in Charlottesville is rated critical, and they all go into the Rivanna. Fortunately, it's below the dam, which is below the drinking water. But you have to treat the rivers as an entire system. The named river, the streams that go into it, the reservoir. For some reason, when we're talking this community discussion about dredging damming, they're not treating the reservoir as part of the Rivanna River. And that is that we're just leaving out probably the most important part of that river for Charlottesville.
Thank you. The next audience question is for Ms. Galvin. Would you ever entertain a combined school system between the city and the county? Ms. Galvin.
Yes, I have done that in the past. I've discussed it with my fellow board members and also with other members in the Alma County School Board. But entertaining is one thing and doing is another. You have to do baby steps along the way. I think there's an acknowledgement on both boards that we could achieve economies of scale, for example, in the city of Charlottesville if we were a bigger system. And we also know that we can share each other's talent and professional development. One thing that I have worked on very strongly is to have a coordinated family support worker program with both our county and our city social services departments as well as our preschool programs. That is one first step that I would like to take as if I'm your city councilwoman, and really look at that and see if that is a good model and an illustration of how we could work together. But before I actually commit to something like that, let's do something that we know we need right away, because poverty knows no boundaries. Thank you.
Thank you. The next audience question will go to Mr. Collins. Residents and visitors are noticing an increased presence of groups of intoxicated individuals in the downtown area. Some believe that the image of the city is being negatively impacted for prospective business owners and visitors. How would you approach this issue, Mr. Collins?
Well, we don't approach the issue of homelessness or poverty by sweeping it under the rug. I don't think we need laws that limit panhandlers and people seeking assistance to have to do so elsewhere. One of the first big steps that we can do is to immediately build a homeless shelter, which I would be all in support of. Through that, we need to make sure that we have our transition points of housing covered. And this is a very important thing when we go from a shelter into, say, an SRO, getting folks from the shelter into the SRO, from the SRO into public housing. We need to greatly expand all of these programs for people, and I would be in support of that. When it comes to substance abuse, it's something that strikes me near and dear, and I think in Charlottesville, we have very few services, particularly for women, when it comes to dealing with substance abuse, and we could do a lot more to make sure we have adequate substance abuse facilities.
Thank you. Next audience question, we'll go to Mr. Hooja. When two of a candidate's top priorities are to build a road through the city's largest park and to clear-cut up to 60,000 trees in the city's largest natural area, in your opinion, can that candidate rightfully claim to be green? Mr. Hooja.
Well, I think you can, without a doubt. You know that there are many things that you need to do in green development, green space. We need also, you need to get to the parks, and there are trees which are provided. If you don't have to cut any trees, you won't be building any houses. So it is not that you can't cut any trees. You need to think of green in a more comprehensive fashion. Open space, trees, water, and all those things, and protection of those assets of our community. And I think I've shown over the history of my past public service that I have been very protective of the environment.
Thank you. Okay. Next, we're going to have an opportunity for the candidates to ask each other questions. And the asking order, we're going to start with Mr. Williams at the other end, come back this direction, which is the reverse order from the opening statements. Again, no candidate can be asked more than two questions. And because of the way we do this format, some candidates may not be asked any questions by their fellow candidates up on the stage. So, Mr. Williams, do you have a question you would like to ask of another candidate?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. This question would jointly, it'll just take a yes or a no from both.
You only get to ask one candidate.
Okay. Ms. Galvin, did you know, I know that you're in favor of the of building the dam, but do you know the origin of the money where people wanted to support you in favor of the dam? And have you received any support?
Ms. Galvin, you'll have 1.5 minutes for your response.
I know that I have received about 108 contributions to my campaign. And among those contributions have been from representatives of the building community, the banking community, the trades. These are all entities that are responsible for building our roads, building our housing, providing the public transportation, fixing our housing, and providing the jobs that every single one of us has been saying we need. About 11% of my contributions came from that category, the tradespeople, the businesses, the small businesses that we do know is the source of most of our employment. So it's a little bit confusing to me when that group of people is being criticized and that somehow I'm going to be beholden to that group of people when we're all saying that that is the kind of partnership we need. Also, within the Democratic Party, I am keeping very good company. When I think about Marianne Elwood, who was the president of the Chamber of Commerce, she recently passed away. I'm also in good company with Tim Hulbert,
a Democrat, proud Democrat, who's also the current president of the chamber. We need to forge partnerships with the Chamber of Commerce so that we grow these jobs, so that we have the infrastructure we need that also employs the people that we need to employ and provides the training that we all want.
Thank you. Ms. Smith, you have an opportunity now to ask a question of another candidate.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for Brandon Collins. Brandon, you have an admirable platform piece that anybody in the city should be guaranteed a job. And I was just wondering if you wanted to elaborate on what kind of jobs and how we will pay for that program.
Mr. Collins, you'll have a minute and a half for your response.
Sure. Well, there's a variety of different approaches we can do to make this happen. I do not shy away from the idea of expanding public works. Now, public works projects, in a lot of ways, use grant money from the state and federal governments. And when we get those grant money, we need to make sure that a local workforce is doing the work. We have a good foundation with the new Section 3 coordinator, the new office that was created to take any HUD projects that come our way, get businesses signed up, contractors signed up to ensure that public housing and low-income workforce is used. Now, that same office we can use to ensure that all our city contracts, every time we contract with folks, that we are including a local workforce. That's not going to put nearly enough people to work. The job center in itself is a good way for the private sector to recruit, but we need to think of other ways to use our very limited space here in Charlottesville, and it's not going to be by building little boutiques and these tiny little businesses that don't really employ enough people. So we need to be looking to attract business that pay good wages, that are in the business of light industry. I do believe that's very important. But when we do that, we need to make sure that we're not just giving them everything they want, that they need to actually be giving us everything we want, and then we'll try to attract them. Thanks.
Mr. Fenwick, who would you like to ask a question of?
It's a question for Dee Dee. Dee Dee, I know you were the chairwoman excuse me, of the school board several years ago. And when you took over, they had a pretty high dropout rate for youngsters. So what did you do to tackle that? And was there anything in particular that would be helpful today as well?
Ms. Smith, you'll have a minute and a half.
Okay. When I started on the school board in the year 2000, there was a failure rate among African-American third graders of 70%. That is a very large predictor of not finishing high school. So there was, as the, you know, in the 6 years I was on the school board, we implemented a lot of pretty strong reading programs. We had much more data following whether the programs were working, but they were very often just implemented in a school here. Johnson Elementary did some very interesting things. Greenbrier had some good successes. And so what we did was to take, when we saw those successes, take them into other schools really with a focus on that early education, because if you lose children by the third grade, it's very, very hard to get them back. It's particularly with literacy and math. And so there was a big focus on those early education. And then there was some very innovative programs in the high school, again, to try to kind of recapture children who had slipped through the cracks. And get them to a point where they could at least finish high school. And I think there has been some good success, but we have a long way to go. And it is imperative that our children learn not only the skills, but that they do get a high school degree.
Thank you. Ms. Galvin,
yes.
Who would you like to ask a question of?
Since Mr. Williams was so kind to ask me a question, I shall ask him one. Andrew, one of the needs or goals you've identified as part of your campaign has been security. Could you explain what kind of security you're talking about? Is this just about our local police and sheriffs, or are there other things involved in that,
that one-word slogan.
And Mr. Williams, you'll have a minute and a half.
Well, I'd like to say that I've scheduled a ride along with one of our sergeants in the police department. The goal would be to be chauffeured around Charlottesville and also to meet really soon with Police Chief Longo. This falls under the category in my campaign and my platform under city service reinforcement. While we need to support every division of government, we certainly need to look at safety at this point in time, particularly in hard economic time. Statistically, when the economy is worse, then the crime steadily increases. Look at Detroit, Michigan. As far as city service reinforcement, I think that we need to support our officers, but our officers need a certain degree of empathy, a certain degree of customer service. We need to serve our residents, and our police department is an extension of that. When you get pulled over, there should be a good reason why you get pulled over. When you're stopped on the street in a particular neighborhood, there should be a good reason. We need to balance that representation in government, and that will trickle down and radiate in every single department that we have. The reason why it hasn't is because we don't have a different perspective on council. The reason why we don't have a different perspective on council is because our government is imbalanced. I don't see the need for partisan politics at the local level, and that's why I, Brandon Collins, and Bob Fenwick are running as independents.
Thank you. Next, Mr. Collins, is there someone you would like to ask a question?
Well, this question could be directed to two folks, but I'm going to go ahead and ask Ms. Galvin. The water supply plan that you support has been estimated to be about $142 million versus $36 million for a plan that includes dredging. Days before the Democratic primary, a mailing went out from the Monticello Business Association that misleadingly compared dredging to the new dam and grossly misunderestimated what, to use a Bush term, said that the dam would be $25 million. This is very inaccurate information. On that same mailing, the Monticello Business Alliance endorsed you and Mr. Hooja. So my question is, will you publicly and aggressively refute the information that was on that mailing and to ask the Monticello Business Alliance to stop sending out materials on your behalf, to return the $500 that they have given you in contributions, and to further pledge that you will resist any attempt by private companies to privatize or own any stock in our water supply?
Ms. Galvin, you'll have a minute and a half.
Yes. So postcards were mentioned. And also, I'd like to bring up the reality that there were certain articles written in The Hook, for example, that many people in the community also took to task as not presenting accurate information. So I would like to assure the voting public that I would not be basing any of my policy decisions on what I read on a postcard or what I read in articles in the newspaper. You need to look at all your sources. You need to talk with all your colleagues on council. And I need to always assure you, as I've been doing on the school board, I've always done my homework. I always do look in to the studies and the reports, and there have been many, very many, on the water plan and on the pipeline and the various comparisons between repairing the pipeline to Sugar Hollow versus a new pipeline to the Rivanna South Fork. And that all that data gets conflated, and it gets somewhat confusing to the general public. That's why I assure you, again, I do not base my policies on Hook articles any more than I do on postcards. And I've already answered the question about my feelings about the local business community. There's no quid pro quo here. They are really supporting a smart growth candidate, which means we have a very progressive business community. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hooja, you now get to ask a question, and you cannot ask yourself or Ms. Galvin, since she has already had two ask of her.
I guess I'll ask my neighbor, Mr. Collins. Mr. Collins, I read the understand that you do not want people who are arrested, if they're immigrants or not immigrants, be checked in the with the police. How would the police find out if they're illegally here or not?
You'll have a minute and a half, Mr. Collins.
There are various programs in the United States, namely the Secure Communities Program, that are asking local police to check immigration status, particularly for folks who are in jail. This is something that happens. I think our police department has been, for the most part, pretty fair about not checking immigration status. The main thing that I think is important, that Charlottesville be a place where immigrants, where undocumented people are treated as human beings, and when they do break the law, that they are not subject to punishment that is way beyond what their crime is. So, for example, a traffic stop should not end in deportation for somebody who also has a family here. This is what I would like to see the city moving towards. I know that there are organizations in this town that are prepared to ask council about non-cooperation with the Secure Communities Act, and I would support council in resisting participation in that. And it's something that's been happening nationwide, and I think we can be a safe city for undocumented people. They are valued members of our community, and our community is much more dangerous if we have people hiding in the shadows because they're afraid to talk to the police, because they're afraid of deportation and other things. That's basically where that part of my platform comes from, and I take that as something that is very important. It's not something that's been talked about much throughout the campaign, but I do stand for the rights of all people to not be deported.
Thank you. That concludes our program for this evening, and I want to thank the candidates and give the audience an opportunity to thank you for running and for being here tonight. Let's give them a round of applause. I want to thank the Daily Progress for co-sponsoring this event with us tonight, and also let you know that we will be mailing, first class in the mail, a voter guide for the city council election. So every registered voter will receive a nonpartisan voter guide from Charlottesville Tomorrow and the Daily Progress. We are interviewing all the candidates. We'll take excerpts of their responses to build that voter guide information. There are also other forums coming up in the community. Those are available on our calendar at cvilletomorrow.org. We encourage you to look at those, participate in those events as well. And also, the audio and video of tonight's candidate forum will be available on our website later this week. Again, thank you for coming tonight. We appreciate it.